Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. My name is Daniel Baker, and I'm your host. Joining us today, we have Chris Furlow, President and CEO of Texas Bankers Association. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks very much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Prior to joining TBA, I know you served in a variety of different positions, such as President and COO of the International Risk Management and Security Advisory Firm, and you've worked in a number of different leadership positions with the government, including Executive Director for Homeland Security Advisory Council and Director of State Affairs for the Office of Homeland Security. So that's a little different than banking. How'd you get from there to here?
Well, you know, it's not all that terribly different if you think about it. What are our bankers? They are risk managers, if you really think about it. And that's how I got into banking was some of the roles that you talked about at the White House Office of Homeland Security, at the Department of Homeland Security, got me to, once I came into the private sector, working with banks and other financial services providers and working on mostly their physical security as well as cybersecurity. And then it just progressed from there, working with leaders on their overall risk management profiles and how to get from a continuous improvement standpoint better every day. And so it's not too much of a jump, but you know, in the banking industry, we have an awful lot of issues to tackle from an advocacy standpoint. And spent some time on the Hill and working with members of Congress and certainly with state officials as well. And so I think it prepared me well to come to TBA, where we work with all of those folks and we deal with these types of risks.
Yeah, I can imagine having those contacts and having the experience working with those individuals would definitely come in handy in your current position. So let me ask you then, we've had a variety of different Bankers Association presidents on our podcast before. What is the responsibility of a Bankers Association president? What's your day-to-day like?
Yeah. Well, kind of how I look at my job at TBA is to ensure that our ship is solving problems for bankers in the state of Texas. We have close to 400 bank members. Banks of all sizes, but at heart, we're a community bank organization. The overwhelming majority of our members are community banks. And oftentimes, they don't have the resources of some of our larger members, both in terms of personnel, technology, and the like. And so how do we solve problems for our member banks? Sometimes that's advocacy. So getting into the fray when it comes to politics. As you know, we have a very fractious political environment, particularly in Washington, D.C., where the majorities are very close. And so giving our bankers a voice in that process is really one of the key elements to our mission here at the Texas Bankers Association. But we also look to other challenges. I like to put things into three buckets, the type of risks our bankers are dealing with today. Number one is competitive risk. So there are an awful lot of entities, non-banks, in some cases they're fintechs, that want to compete with banks. And they don't want to compete on a level playing ground. Sometimes they don't want to have the same regulatory requirements that protects bank customers and the public. And so competitive risk is something we need to address. Related to competitive risk, we also especially want to put a focus on innovation for community banks so that from a technology standpoint, they have the opportunity to compete with other banks for their market share that they would like. So we have what we call the Innovation Magnet program here at TBA. It's a facilitator. What it enables are community banks to learn about technology and the types of solutions that may be out there to improve and enhance the customer experience. We have the ability to generate data so community banks can make informed decisions about the types of technologies they may use. But it also enables them to partner together, to create scale, to share the costs. So it doesn't all fall on them. And right now we're in an environment, particularly where you've seen the recent collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, which was heavily focused on technology and investors. You know, our model is different. It doesn't start with the investors. It starts with the community bankers. And by having a market that technology companies are interested in, which is nearly 400 member banks at the Texas mm-hmm. Bankers Association. They're drawn to us, which is why we call it the magnet. So it starts with their priorities first, and we can assure folks they will have a very strong market if they're solving the problems of our members. Right. And so that is kind of where we see competitive risk. Related to that, there is cyber risk. So if you you think about the way we work with our innovation magnet, that's collective offense for Texas banks, particularly our community banks. Then you look at cyber risk, which is probably one of the things that have always kept bankers up at night. One of the things that we've done at TBA is start the nation's first state banking information sharing and analysis organization. Hmm. The acronym is ISAO. And what that does is TBA provides a secure platform on which bankers can share information about threats. They can mm-hmm. talk about the types of solutions they're bringing to bear. We've actually have the ability to perform some analysis on threats so that we can quickly share information. So, for example, in many models, when you share information, it has to go up through the Washington, D.C.
Right.
Willy Wonka machine, as I call it, where it's color-coded and tabbed, and then you may get something 3 weeks later. It's about getting timely and relevant information from Texas banker to Texas banker. And so our community banks have really responded to that. In just over 2 years, we have over 200 banks participating in the ISAO and sharing information, and close to 400 bankers participating. So wow. That's collective defense. There's collective yeah. offense from our magnet. There's collective defense from our ISAL. And so those are two forms of risk that we're dealing with. The final piece in the three buckets that I like to talk about is regulatory risk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that banks have been dealing with for some time, particularly in the Dodd-Frank era. We are seeing some Dodd-Frank dinosaurs, I guess is the best way to call it. It's been nearly a dozen years since it was mm-hmm. passed. You know, I'm thinking about things like Section 1071, which goes from a few pages in the legislation to hundreds of pages. The government is looking to collect data on data points that actually exceed what was called for in the legislation. So we're seeing mm-hmm. some overreach. And on something like that, and we can get into it later if you'd like, but, you know, at the end of the day, it is another burden on community banks. And when is the government going to stop asking us to report to them and allow our banks to really focus in on serving customers? If you're putting such a compliance burden, and this is obviously where Compliance Alliance is helping to alleviate that burden, but if you continue to stack and stack compliance burden, you're going to put more people responding to the government than interacting to the community, providing access to capital. And so that's a big concern that we have. That's just one example. But at the end of the day, pushing back on regulatory overreach, certainly the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is one of those agencies we think has become unaccountable. They are off appropriations, and they sometimes push out without following the Administrative Procedures Act. They push out new rules or guidance. So, for example, we're a party to a lawsuit against CFPB because they pushed out new UDAP guidance without really going through the Administrative Procedures Act, which means that they didn't get comment back on what the impact would be, not only on the banks. What we really care about from the banking perspective is the impact on customers. So those are the three kind of key focuses that we put on at TBA is focusing on competitive risk and cyber risk and regulatory risk. But it's got to be about solving problems. So final thing I'd say is that, you know, we also focus on really training the next generation of bankers. You know, our members can come to us when they're fresh at a bank. And all the way through the time where there may be a CEO or in the C-suite or on the board of directors, and making sure that we are providing information that makes them a better banker, brings value to them. These are the things we care about. So just, you know, if you're a member of the TBA staff, you know, solving problems of our bankers is mission number one. Yeah. So if we're just a trade association that only existed just to perpetuate ourselves, that would be failure, and we're not going to fail. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I completely agree with those three buckets. Like those are perfect transition into it's actually what I'd like to discuss with you today. Coming from your background, you've got a unique insight, or you've got a good insight into the industry and how it is today. By when we're recording this, I mean we just saw two major banks collapse, and put it in scale compared to what we saw in like 2008, 2009, 2010. Like these are big banks that it can be kind of comparable to Washington Mutual and whatnot. What do you see happening in the industry with these banks collapse? I mean, the Fed just continued to raise the rates just the other day. Like what do you expect to continue going on? Like how is this going to impact the industry?
You know, I think the first reaction, obviously, when you see a bank failure is to look at the bank itself. And it was very clear in the case of particularly Silicon Valley Bank that it was poorly managed. I mean, the simple fact, you don't have to be a regulator to know that when a bank is over concentrated to the tune of over 90% and having I believe it was over 90% uninsured deposits as well, something was amiss there, both from a management standpoint and from a regulator standpoint. Where were the regulators in all of that? But I would say in general, some of the questions that the failures raise are what are the impact of things like interest rates? You know, the Fed held off. I mean, for the longest time, the Fed was saying, hey, this is transitory. And I think the American people were feeling it in a much different way. And to catch up, I believe the Fed then had to quickly start to raise rates. And it was on a hockey stick. And that has an impact. Totally understand the Fed trying to bring inflation under control. But again, rather than an easier path, it is that proverbial hockey stick. And that can create problems. I think those were some contributing factors to what we saw. It's created some unease. And I think one of the things that we need to do is really focus in on how we manage risk in the system much better. You know, the FDIC was founded in the midst of the Great Depression. And the purpose of deposit insurance was to stave off runs on banks. And today, I don't think deposit insurance is working the way it was intended. It seems that the federal government has basically all but communicated that the largest of institutions will be covered because of their systemic importance. But it leaves some gaps because we're hearing from Washington, some of the regulators, certainly Secretary Yellen, just a few weeks ago was testifying, and it wasn't clear whether or not there was going to be a backstop if we saw a contagion for community banks and for regional banks. And the focus really needs to be on ensuring the ecosystem so that depositors can feel confident, whether they have their financial resources in the largest bank or in the smallest community bank, that their dollars are safe. And there need to be some reforms. TBA has been very active in traveling to Washington, D.C., meeting with our congressional delegation, and really being a part of that conversation. Because ultimately, you know, our banks are a part of the community. We're driving small business, very much like we saw with PPP during the pandemic. A lot of folks don't know that our Texas banks process more than $60 billion in PPP small business loans.
Big number.
So if you think about that, you know, these small businesses often had more than one employee, and they process close to a million PPP loans. So that tells you millions of jobs were saved. That's our banks in action, caring for the communities. And we need to also ensure that our bank depositors can know that their dollars are safe. Final thing I'll say about deposit insurance is the banks pay into that. That's who pays for the deposit insurance fund are the banks themselves. And if the system is not allowing banks to, in essence, get the benefit of that on behalf of their depositors, then something's awry. And I think that's what Congress has been looking at the concerns that started with Silicon Valley Bank and with Signature have just lent to a lot of questions in the system. And I think it's really important for us to get out there and have some solutions that ensure, particularly during national emergencies like COVID, or when we have economic shocks that may be driven from outside the system or within, that we know that Americans can be confident in their bank regardless of size.
So that poses a kind of a unique question, unique perspective, because I was with a friend this morning and we were discussing the banking industry, and he made a comment to me of how he's already pulled 10 grand out of his account and he's planning on going and pulling 20 more and putting it under the proverbial mattress. Like how can banks maintain that confidence with their depositors? I mean, I know the FDIC absolutely has a role with it, but what can a smaller community bank do to maintain that confidence with their depositors?
Well, you know, our community banks do a tremendous job of relationship banking. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why communities are so tight knit. That's why when someone has a ball team to sponsor, or they need something for a church project or for something in the community, they go to that community bank for support. And I think a part of that is an education process. And so many of our community banks are reaching out to their customers. And some of this is an education process. So for example, the friend that you mentioned, you know, if his deposits are under $250,000 at that bank, he's good. That's something that everyone knows and understands. But for example, there are some small businesses, maybe a small manufacturer. Maybe they've got less than 100 employees, but they may have deposits in excess of $250,000. And so they want to know that there's confidence in the system, confidence that means they don't have to switch their bank because a crisis of some sort is happening. That's the type of certainty that we're talking about. Those are the types of reforms that we need to ensure. Again, if your preference is to deal with and work with a larger institution, that you can feel confident doing that. But if you want to go around the corner because you like that personal service, mm-hmm. You like the offerings, whether they be digital or in person at a community bank or at a regional bank, regardless, that you know that your deposits are safe. That's the type of certainty we need, not just for our deposit insurance and how that works, but certainly right. for the entire economy in the United States today.
So would you recommend then like a proactive approach where these banks should be reaching out to some of their higher balance customers, like just to touch base with them? It's like, hey, this is the situation, this is going on, you can maintain confidence with us. Like, is that the kind of approach you'd recommend?
You bet. And there are so many different ways that community banks can provide advice to their customers in regard to the certain ways that if someone even is over the $250,000 threshold, that they can help you get insurance well above that 250. So there's not just one way to do it. And that's why that conversation with the community banker is so important. When someone has questions about their deposits, they should feel very comfortable talking to their bank and getting those questions answered. And so one of the ways that if community banks are not already doing that, that proactive outreach mm-hmm. is one of the best ways you can kind of keep the deposits there at home and at work in the community. It's good for the bank and it's good for the customer as well.
So then you mentioned an element of education, because I mean, obviously, in order for the customer to have confidence in the bank, the bankers that are working with the customers must be substantially educated in what they're talking about. Otherwise, there's just going to be confusion and lead to ultimately distrust in the bank. So how can a bank really improve the education around the FDIC and their knowledge of their bankers? What should a bank be doing? Like, is there any specific steps you'd recommend?
Well, certainly they can work with the regulators. The regulators often do provide an awful lot of information about the programs that they are offering. One of the things that we do at TBA, and why we certainly encourage bankers in Texas to engage with TBA, is we provide access to those regulators. Mm-hmm. So for example, when the Bank Term Funding Program came out shortly after the SVB and Signature failures, and that facility was put into place, TBA was one of the first banking associations in the country to hold a briefing on that program to enable our members to be able to ask questions of Fed personnel so that they could better understand the program, to access resources and materials and documents that would help them make a decision on whether or not utilizing that program would be to their benefit and the benefit of their customers. And so that's one of the great things that we see, and one of the value, part of the value that we'd like to bring from TBA to our bankers is providing that access to people who have unique knowledge. And that's not just on things like what we've experienced more recently, but certainly on general issues. We literally conduct hundreds of schools and train up to 10,000 bankers a year on various topics, for all the way from lending schools to we provide forums for our IT and cyber professionals as well, the many different roles that you find within the bank context. We have huddles. So, for example, today, as we're recording this, there's a group of bankers who are meeting CEOs, having a conversation in person. Every other Tuesday, we also have what we call our CEO and senior management Zoom calls, so that as the banking environment changes, bankers can hear peer-to-peer how they're solving problems or they're sharing concerns. And that in and of itself makes all of our bankers better. It's fellowship, it's professional development, it's these schools, whether your role is a CFO or a chief risk officer. We probably have a program for you, regardless of the role in your bank. And then I would say we also have, on behalf of the industry, engaging with TBA provides the opportunity to do different things. So, for example, we have a community bankers council where we can focus on the particular needs of our community banks. Again, the majority of our members here at TBA. But we also have a regional bankers council for institutions who are a bit larger. We have a council for young bankers. It's we call it the BLC, the Bank Leadership Council. So as you're up and coming, you're building relationships that will support you in your banking career. You're gonna advance throughout your banking career with people that you know. So those are just a few of the examples of the ways that you can engage, you can educate yourself, you can educate others. That's the other thing I love about the banking community. People are eager to share. They are eager to support one another, because within the banking community, we have an awful lot, you know, we have some other folks who want to be in our space, so to speak. And so we need to really work together to ensure that we have a healthy banking system, not only for the businesses in which we operate, but for the communities that we serve.
So really what I'm hearing is take advantage of the tools that you have available to you, and then communicate with those that are going to be in the same situation as you. So you were mentioning like the CEO, C-level, the upper management meeting that you get together. So really just having that open lines of communication and taking advantage of those tools. Would you say that that's an accurate summary of what you were getting at?
Yeah, you bet. And you know, there are different ways that we can deliver that material. Again, for some people, it's just easier to be able to have something like we're doing here today to do that virtually, but we also have a number of opportunities to engage on a peer-to-peer basis in person. The other thing I would say is that you can also be involved in advocacy for the industry. I often have conversations with bankers around the state, and when we do, I'll ask the question, do you like the regulatory environment that you're in which you're working? Are you tired of seeing this constant barrage of new regulations? Some in government encouraging people in the community not to trust the banking industry. Well, that's when we need to get active. We need to be a voice for the industry. We need to be proactive. And being on our government relations council is one way we do that. So we've recently come back from another visit to Washington, D.C., meeting with our members of Congress, meeting with folks from the regulatory community. That's a way to have that engagement, and particularly our younger bankers. I would say in the past, bankers kind of felt like politics was dirty, let someone else do that. But it, you know, politics is policy. And unless you're active and engaged, other folks will make decisions about our industry for us. And so that's where, you know, we go to Washington, D.C. We go to the Capitol here in Austin to make sure we're engaging with state legislators as well. And so that's those are different ways that folks can engage. They can make a difference at their bank.
So let me ask you then, because obviously they can engage through TBA and through the TBA avenues, and that's a great avenue to take. If they want to do more, so more than what TBA has to offer, how can these individuals get involved on maybe a personal side, or maybe just on a bank individually side? How can they really get involved in these legislative matters?
Yeah, well, you know, regardless of what industry you're in, we all have a responsibility to give back to the community. Mm-hmm. I think one of the ways that, particularly for younger bankers, you know, look at the example that our longtime community bankers have set, whether it is some sort of civic organization. Some people are involved politically, but some folks are involved with the United Way, or they're involved with the arts and culture, things that enhance the community. And I think that's one of the ways that you can bring to the banking sector relationships. Mm-hmm. You can bring leadership experience, and all of it comes together to make you a better banker. And it makes you, it helps you to bring value back to the community that you serve as a banker. So in addition to serving on TBA committees, et cetera, that are focused pretty much in the banking space, we encourage folks to be diverse in terms of their outreach and their activities. It all helps. You bring unique perspectives from that experience outside of banking to the table, to TBA and to our industry. And likewise, TBA and our industry can bring perspectives that folks in the community want. Mm-hmm. One of the programs we're really proud of at TBA is called CREATE, and that stands for Community Reinvestment and Trust Enterprise. And it is really about doing three things. The first is focusing in on financial literacy, particularly in underserved communities, for individuals and families. Banks have done financial literacy very well for a long time. One of the ways we're expanding that out at TBA is focusing on business literacy as well. So especially in underserved communities, we go to the bank in that community and say, why do you often have to say no to a loan in this community? What's the problem that you have, the barrier to getting your bank to say yes? And then we specifically build a curriculum to focus on solving that problem. And we bring in community groups to help promote an educational seminar online or in person. For example, accessing capital for small businesses. That's one we've done with a bank in the Houston area. And it was fantastic to see the community groups come together. And one of the things that came out of that seminar was understanding that individuals in that community often were denied loans because they didn't have documentation prepared. They didn't know what they needed. And so we worked with a law firm to get pro bono legal services, and individuals that went through our education process at the end of the day had those pro bono services so they could get their paperwork right.
That's awesome.
To make them more probable to get that loan. And some of the banks are doing things individually. There's one bank here in the state of Texas where they have a program. It's a Prosperity Bank. They have a program called MasterClass. And they open a line of credit for individuals that have gone through their course. Again, the banks are doing unique things that you just didn't see 10, 15, 20 years ago, because it's in the best interests of banks and it's in the best interests of the community to expand those markets.
Right,
we
right.
want to see entrepreneurs who unfortunately may not have been fortunate enough to go to college, for example, or go to business school, that they can get some of these skills, apply them in their community, become successful. That means they're going to become bank customers, and we want to see wealth creation. And so I think that that's a big difference that you see in the banking community in Texas today than you would have seen certainly 50 years ago. And we're very, very proud of those efforts.
Yeah, and that's something I can definitely agree on the compliance alliance side of things. We've definitely been seeing a lot more unique and creative way to meet the needs of their customers. Not necessarily all of them are good, but a lot of them have come across that are really fantastic efforts to really meet those credit needs and those banking needs of their customers. So I completely agree. Well, Chris, we are running a little bit about out of time. I know we can sit here and we can talk all day long about upcoming things like 1071 and we'll hit you up again for another episode sometime later. But I did want to give you the opportunity. I mean, these are tumultuous times. We've touched on that already. We've talked about the importance of relationship banking and just establishing confidence with your customers and everything. If you could give one piece of information or one piece of advice to banks that are going to listen to this episode, what would you share with them?
Look, I think the most important thing is that for our banks to continue to be what they have been, which are rocks in their community. We talked about COVID, how the banks were there for their communities, for small businesses, ensuring that families were secure at a time that was a global pandemic, huge economic consequences, and our banks were there. I think even as we see this kind of continuation of some of the uncertainty, our banks can be that calm in the storm. And I think it's really important that we focus in on collaboration. And in areas that we don't see collaboration, particularly with our regulators, that we be proactive and say, hey, how can we work together to help solve a problem that's important to our community? I can tell you that TBA and many of our banks have a very good relationship with the Texas Department of Banking in terms of looking at issues. And there's always going to be that line between the regulator and the regulated, but there are also a lot of ways that we can collaborate. We're fortunate here in the state of Texas, Commissioner Cooper and his team is very good about looking for ways to collaborate whenever possible. Mm-hmm. He's still tough but fair when it comes to regulation and sets that expectation, but that's why we've got truly what we think is the best of the banking system in the United States. But, I think collaboration is very, very important. No one person in the community can do everything on their own. Banks are always that hub. So inspire confidence in your bank by being really involved in the community. I think it will certainly pay dividends in terms of the community growing and being healthy.
I really respect that, and I completely agree with that. I've always found that the most success comes from being involved in the community and establishing those relationships.
And let me say that I need to put in a plug for our fellow state banking associations around the country. They are great resources. Obviously, I've talked about the Texas Bankers Association today, but the other banker associations in states around the country want to do the same things in terms of supporting our banks and our bankers with resources that they need. So feel free to reach out to us at TBA and the Texas Bankers Association, but also feel free if you're in another state to reach out to your bankers association. Really talented individuals and people who, very much like our bankers, are really focused in on relationships and they want to help.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, Chris, thank you very much for joining us for today's show. We really appreciate you joining and sharing some of your experiences with us.
Now you bet, Daniel. And thanks for everything that the Compliance Alliance and Bankers Alliance team does across the country to support banks every single day.
Well, you're going to make me blush. We appreciate the compliment there. For the rest of you tuning in, thank you again for joining us for today's show. That's Banking Matters.